Hi, and thank you for joining us at the Carolyn Glasso Bailey Foundation. Today, there is a podcast happening with Cassandra C. Jones, an artist who lives and works in Ojai, formerly Brooklyn, and Heather Stobo, who is the co-director of the Porch Gallery, Ojai. We asked Heather to interview Cassandra for this podcast because Cassandra has a current show at the gallery, Porch Gallery, Ojai, called JPEG Mountain. So please sit back and enjoy while we hear Cassandra speak about her work.
Jones' work reflects a disparate influence in her life, technology, and the natural beauty of the landscape that surrounds her Ojai Valley home. With Jones' meticulous touch, images of nature are morphed through the digital process to create a surrealist representation of nature viewed through a digital prism. For her piece, Accumulation of Nameless Energies, Jones starts with a single representation of a bird. The image is multiplied, spun, and overlaid hundreds of times to create the woven pattern of a bear standing on its hind legs. Upending the static reality of vision, the visual hierarchy of the bird and the bear fluctuate with the viewing range, which we will discuss in this podcast. The experience at 3 feet is completely flipped at 10. Cassandra C. Jones lives and works in Ojai, California. She received her BFA from the California College of Art and her MFA from Carnegie Mellon University. Her work has shown in venues throughout the US and Europe, including Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts, the Museum of Contemporary Art in Santa Barbara, and the Pre-Art Electronica in Linz. So we'll start with the questions. Where did the idea of JPEG Mountain come from?
Well, I technically live in Ojai on a cliff overlooking the Ventura River, and we have a 180-degree view of Los Padres National Forest, including White Peak Mountain. And it's a completely epic view. And so JPEG Mountain refers to the mountain I see outside my window every day and the mountain of photos I go through to make my work.
So before the show, you actually made a neon sign of the title of the show that we were hanging our window. And which has been really fun for us because everyone thinks we'd change the name of the gallery to JPEG Mountain. So I was talking to someone last night. They're like, oh, JPEG Mountain, your gallery. I was like, yes. Okay, so then having moved from Brooklyn to Ojai, how has that affected your work and influences?
Well, for years I've had a studio in Ojai. When I got out of grad school and I started making work with digital imagery, I needed to buy a large format printer, and my dad had an empty room on one of his properties that he let me use. So I've had a studio here since I left grad school. Even though I lived all over, whenever I had a big show, I would come back to Ojai and make it here. It was like my own personal residency. So it's always kind of had something to do with my work, but this particular show has, actually living here for the last 4 years, it's really seeped into my work in kind of a special way. And I've been really sort of affected by the nature here and how that is in contrast with me wanting to be on the computer all the time.
So the bear piece is 44 inches by 81, is that correct?
Something like that, yeah.
Did you always work that big?
No. Well, I've done installation work. I had an installation piece here in Ojai in 2006 at the Nathan Laramendi Gallery. I think that was right around the time when I started doing installation work. So I've done large wallpaper installations, but not until recently have I started doing really large prints.
Okay. So when did you start working with digital images?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but I'll give you the abbreviated version. When I was 12 years old, my Greek grandmother made me promise that I would go to Greece with her when my grandfather died. But he had always been dying. My whole life he'd been dying at emphysema, and I can't ever remember him being healthy. And when I was 27, the summer before my thesis year at Carnegie Mellon, he died. And she held me to my promise to go back to Greece with her. And I did not want to go, and because I had so much to do, I had to come up with a thesis show. I had to actually find out what I was going to write my thesis about. But she bought my ticket for a 3-month trip, the whole summer, and I'm pretty much pathologically loyal to her. So I agreed to go, and I took everything I had with me. I took all my camera equipment. I was a photographer at the time, and I took all my theory books, and I mean everything. And I went with the intention that I was going to work all summer on my thesis. And it was really challenging once I got there because it's not really a conducive environment for that. So every day for the first 2 weeks was pretty much the same. We would leave the house. We were in this tiny, tiny little village that she was born in, and we would leave the house and we would walk 2 feet, and she would see someone she knew and they would recognize each other, and she would cry and they would hug, and then we'd go out for a coffee. And this happened like 3 or 4 times a day, and I didn't understand anything they were talking about. And at one point, someone showed me their photo album, and I was in it. And even though I had never been to that part of Greece, my mother had sent photographs home back to Greece of me and my sister. So I was in this photo album, and I was really fascinated by that. And at the time, I was reading a book called On Photography by Susan Sontag, which is like photography 101, and there was a line in there that said something to the effect of, sunsets are cheesy because there are too many photographs taken of them. And since I was writing a book on, or I was writing a thesis on photography to begin with, there was something really interesting about that to me, that I was in this, I was in this place where like everything had been photographed. Like I even ended up in the tourist magazine twice before I'd left the island. Like it was just like, blue skies, endless blue skies, and the sea, and the typical Greek culture, and like all this stuff. So that was really interesting to me, that like there was this one type of photograph that was cheesy because it had been photographed too much. And so I started collecting photographs of the sunset while I was there. I would go down to the internet cafe and sort of scour the internet, and then I came back to Pittsburgh, to Carnegie Mellon, and made that my thesis project. So I found over 10,000 photographs of the sunset, and I collected 1,400 and sized them all so that and made a video so that the sun sets perfectly through 1,400 photographs of the sunset. And it changed my life. It changed my career. It gave me direction, and that video showed all over the world, and it got me my first gallery, and then I was like, wow, that was so amazing. What other kinds of photographs are out there that echo, And so I went to eBay, and because back then you could buy, you probably still can buy like discs of stock photography. So you can buy like, for $20 you get 100 barns in Vermont or something. And there were all kinds of ones. There was like flowers and mountains and boats and all this stuff, but there was one that was of cheerleaders for $1.99, and I got that one. And it was some guy had just scanned in all these photographs of cheerleaders from magazines, and the most common shot was a leg up in the air. And so I took all those, and I ended up making a wallpaper out of it, and then I was hooked on this path.
Were those on white background, or had they cut them out and isolated them?
No, they were not. I back then they didn't really do that, or didn't have access to those type of photographs. Now I use stock photography agencies, and I can have access to all kinds of big, beautiful digital things on white backgrounds. But back then, no, I cut them all out.
Now back to Greece. It seems like the amount of time you spent there heavily influenced the body of work. Yep. But do you think the grief did too?
The grief, what do you mean the grief?
Well, so you're saying you witnessed your grandmother's, like basically meeting people and crying, and, or was that just
like
kind of repetitive?
She was crying for, they were happy to see each other. So
oh,
it was
okay.
But I mean, speaking of grief in Greece, I don't like going there. And, my Greece is not the same Greece as everyone else's Greece. Mine is the dilapidated village Greece, not the whitewashed beautiful buildings of Greece. So I don't love going there, but I've been many, many times, and oddly, every time I go, I'm like making work influenced by that place becomes my rescue. Mm. And the sunset video was my rescue. I was miserable there for 3 months, and I made that video, and I was able to cope with the experience I was having because of that.
Oh, okay. So tell me about the accumulation of nameless energies, the big yellow bear made out of birds. This has been a focal point of the show at the Porch Gallery, and one of the most ambitious works to date.
Yeah, so The Bear took a year to make. It was the only thing I made when I was pregnant with my second son. And part of what's in there is that being pregnant with a second child, my fears of the world were growing, and one of my biggest fears are bears. So in a small way, I kind of felt like if I could make the bear, I wouldn't be scared of the bear anymore. So it's not a mama bear thing. It's definitely, another coping mechanism. But also, I was very, on a totally different side of things, I was very inspired by a passage in a book called White Noise by Don DeLillo. I actually have it here, and I'll read the passage. It's fairly short. Several days later, Murray asked me about a tourist attraction known as the most photographed barn in America. We drove 22 miles into the country around Farmington. There were meadows and apple orchards. White fences trailed through the rolling fields. Soon the signs started appearing, the most photographed barn in America. We counted 5 signs before we reached the site. There were 40 cars and a tour bus in a makeshift lot. We walked along a cow path to a slightly elevated spot set aside for viewing and photographing. All the people had cameras. Some had tripods, telephoto lenses, filter kits. A man in a booth sold postcards and slides, pictures of the barn taken from the elevated spot. We stood near a grove of trees and watched the photographers. Murray maintained a prolonged silence, occasionally scrawling some notes in a little book. "No one sees the barn," he said finally. A long silence followed. "Once you've seen signs about the barn, it becomes impossible to see the barn." He fell silent once more. People with cameras left the elevated site, replaced by others. "We're not here to capture an image, we're here to maintain one. Every photograph reinforces the aura. Can you feel it, Jack? An accumulation of nameless energies." And that makes sense if you think about the bear in a way that if the birds flew away, the bear wouldn't exist anymore. So it's kind of a metaphor for large groups of people being held together by ideas or a cause, which I think is very prevalent right mm-hmm. now.
Oh, yes. So a year to make it. So not everyone understands your process.
Yeah.
So can you explain it a little and how you start? I mean, I almost want to hear about where you place that first bird.
Okay, so for those who don't know, I make everything in Photoshop. I get all my photos from stock photography agencies, and I do that for several reasons. One is that I give someone money, and they give me their photographs, and we're cool. I can do what I need to do with them. And two, the photographs come to me in large format, huge often. They're always crisp and clear. And when I started collecting photographs on stock photography agency sites, back when I was making the sunset video, they had, and this was in 2004, they had 500,000 images, and they were really proud of that. Now they have 17 million. So I don't feel like I need to add to that pile. Everything that I could possibly need, almost, is already, all those photographs are already taken. I just need to go find them. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason. And finally, all those photographs are made for advertising. So they're just a little bit more lifelike than life. And they're stylized in a way that's really interesting to me. Their colors are brighter, they're a little posed. And I'm fascinated by that. So I enjoy looking at them. I can probably look at 2,000 photos in a day in a rapid pace, and they have no problem with that.
Do you do that every day?
I do that a lot. so that's part of it. And then, I get a lot of ideas just by looking at other people's photographs. And when I find something that I'm interested in, then I'll cut them out and probably fiddle with it for months before anything ever happens with it. So, for instance, there's a piece in the show that's composed of ladybugs. So I had those ladybugs in a folder for probably 4 years before I had ever figured out what to do with them. Mm-hmm. And I knew I was interested in it, but I just couldn't quite figure out how the puzzle went together. And with the bear, I had found a photographer that had taken a picture of this lovebird in 50 different positions, and which made it possible for me to construct a bear with shadows and that had weight and mass and everything, with inconsistent color. If I had found those birds on just random birds on the internet, it would be a very different aesthetic experience. So I cut the photos out, and I my technique is very simple. I cut, I paste, I tilt, I size. I very rarely fiddle with color. Again, those photographs come to me with great color. I'm not very good at fiddling with color, but sometimes I will in the printing process. So I print everything myself in my studio here in Ojai. I've been doing it for years, and I do everything in editions of two. So, and I do make an AP, but that's usually for documentation and if I trade.
One thing I found really interesting just recently, we were discussing this, the size of the file, because the layers and the size of the, you know, just the size of the bear. I mean, how big are the files?
The bear is too big to open, as one piece. It's just too big. My hard drive on my laptop is as big as they come, but I can't open the bear, and it's with all its layers. And so I build, and even my smaller pieces, I will often build those in sections. So like one arm was probably 10 gigs. Yeah. So I make the pieces, and then I flatten them, and I make them so their file size is much smaller, and then I sort of piece it together.
How many layers do you think are on the bear?
I don't know, a thousand maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Too many to count. I always start my files out very organized, and then by the end they're just a total chaotic mess.
Like bird number three. All right, another piece in the show that is very resonant, especially in Ojai, is freshwater. The freshwater pearl necklace made out of water droplets. Can you talk about the concept behind this composition and how you got the idea?
Yes. So. Here in Ojai, it's 2016, the end of 2016, and we only have about 3 years left of water. And our water reserve, Lake Casitas, I'm a rower, and since I moved here 4 years ago, I have personally watched our lake drop 70 feet. It's probably even more in the last 2 weeks. So that piece is very specifically about our water becoming a luxury item. And how I got the idea was that my husband and I and my two kids, we went to Norway this summer, and we went to this amazing little house on a farm next to a big giant roaring waterfall. And in Norway, there's just like beautiful crystal clear water everywhere, you know. And every morning we would get up and we would walk up this little path to his aunt's house to have breakfast. And there's this tall grass along the path, and there are these beautiful glistening dewdrops all over. And we were just taking pictures of them, and I wanted to like pick them up and put them on like necklace, like diamond necklaces. And of course I couldn't do that. So instead I came home and I made that piece inspired by that incredible water. And the lack thereof of what we have.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why it's been a very popular piece in the show. Sadly, but and then, as I said in the intro, one aspect of your work that I find very interesting is a play on viewing distance. The visual hierarchy of your subjects fluctuates with the viewing range. The experience at 3 feet is completely different at 10. In your studio, how do you create the far distance and determine the size of the piece?
I guess that's challenging to explain, but I will try. I really rely a lot on my navigator window in Photoshop. So I can tell when I'm working on a file, I can tell how it's going to look from a distance in that navigator window. And it's the one tool that I always have up, and I check everything against it, which is sort of funny. And then oftentimes I will print something out and take it outside, and I'll walk 30 feet away from it, and then I'll paint in my studio, and I'll sit really close to it, and I'll test it out and see how it looks. But for the most part, and I don't even try to do this. For the most part, for some reason, just like what comes out of my head has always got that effect. Without really even trying, it's always got the effect of that you have to anybody who knows my work and has seen my work grow over the last 15 years knows that you have to get closer. That it's never what it seems when you walk in the gallery. You have to take a step closer. Or in this show, particularly, we have a piece where you have to step 80 feet away,
which ends up being the middle of the street.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, which is, you know, been interesting because our gallery is small. And so I love how you did that. You took the piece that you literally have to be outside the gallery to get the correct distance. And which has been great because one of our things is at night we light the gallery. So I've been watching people stop and just study the piece and who have seen it during the day inside the gallery and seeing how it dawns on them, like they're seeing something totally different. And then I guess the final question is, what's next?
I'm working on a museum commission for Wichita, Kansas Art Museum, where they have commissioned me to take their entire glass collection and transform it into a wallpaper piece. The curator's mission was to they have a very historical collection, and she wanted to take that and bring it into the digital realm. And they're purchasing the piece digitally, which I think is very progressive and cool.
Who's photographing it?
They have a staff photographer.
Oh, terrific.
Which is that's luxurious.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.